tea, Mr. Pike?
Hello and welcome to Off Track Racing Show presented by BikeMag.com. We're coming at you guys from the birthplace of the bike park, beautiful Whistler, BC. We're in the studio on the eve of probably arguably the biggest and best bike race series about to take place tomorrow night, and that is none other than the Fat Wednesdays, and we'll be racing Chainless Beeline. I'm your host, Tristan Merrick, and we have one heck of a show lined up for you guys this evening. We have two guests in studio helping us break down what happened at Fort William, and also we'll be catching up with them, finding out what their season's been looking like. We've barely even scratched the surface. We're only in the beginning of June here. It's a long season through to the end of October, but we're going to catch up with them, find out how their racing's been going, what they've been up to, and what we can look forward to later this summer. And let's get right into things right now. Let me introduce my co-host for today's show. He just flew in from across the pond after some scotch tasting events and a whirlwind countryside visit. He was on the outside of the tape of Fort William, and that's none other than Seb Kemp. Seb, thanks for joining us.
Cheers for having us along again, Tristan.
It's a good time overseas there. Got to check out the sights and sounds again.
I think we found the best 10 days of weather Scotland's ever had. So I actually came out with a tan and a hangover.
You're looking very bronze, not in a weird way, but it's good times. And of course, we have our two in-studio guests. Introducing the first person here, we've got none other than TLD Specialized Athlete, signing a major deal in the off-season with Red Bull. He's now part of the Red Bull family. We've got Curtis Keane. Curtis.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. Stoked, man.
Oh, thanks for taking the time. We know you're pretty busy up here right now, working on a new Goldstein production edit for Red Bull and partaking in a little racing and relaxation.
Yeah, just living the Whistler life, racing some Beeline, riding bike park, and yeah, enjoying it, man.
You're not really riding bike park on your typical bike, are you? You're kind of probably getting some weird looks in the lift.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You're getting weird looks, man.
Are you using your Enduro bike?
Yeah, I'm chasing Billinghurst on an E29, Enduro 29. Ooh. Yeah.
Big ones. You won the race, what, 2 years ago? Last year?
Yeah, maybe 3 years ago, yeah. I was on an SX trail, so I brought a different weapon this year.
Ooh.
It's been good, though. Super fun.
I think we'll have to have that debate later on, because there's definitely a few heavy hitters. I mean, we've got Kvorak, we've got Billinghurst yourself, even the old salty man, Tyler Moreland's coming up for some racing.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
It's going to be a jam-packed night tomorrow. And then, of course, our second guest here, man of many titles, Aussie privateer DH racer, Rock River Yamaha mechanic, and pro motocross trainer, Daniel Lavis.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tristan.
No worries.
Good to be here.
All the way up from Southern California.
Yeah, it's been good down there. Nice weather, so it's a change to come up here and have some rain, so it's good.
Nice. Good season so far. I mean, so you brought your little bike. You brought the kind of complete opposite of what Curtis has here.
Yeah, I know. Just 6.5-inch, a little rain, but it's good fun to ride around up the bike park and do some scrubs and stuff. It's cool.
Nice. Well, let's just to connect with the listeners here, you guys can stay up to date with what's going on with the show at Twitter, and that's off_trackMTB. There you can keep up to date with who we're going to have on each and every show, when it'll be live on iTunes, so you can download it there. You can also contact us at offtrackshow@gmail.com. That's where you can ask any longer questions for our guests, or just ask us what's up. And one other way you can stay up to date with what's going on, you can check us out on Instagram. We've got Sven Martin on the ground, the Mongo himself, taking pictures on Instagram, on his iPhone, making things happen. So you can check it out at off_track. And that's where everything will be happening there. So guys, Fort William, World Cup finally happened. It's been 8 long months since Norway, since Stevie finally got his first win. And I mean, it was a long winter. Everybody was talking nothing about downhill. It's pretty much nothing but that E-word talk. But we're not here to talk about that right now. Downhill World Cup is back, and what a race we had. I mean, I don't know where we even start. Do we start with who won, or do we start with who didn't win and kind of surprise us a little bit with that? Seb, you were the man on the ground there. I mean, what did you see?
Well, I think the big thing, that course has been used for a bunch of races already this year. I think there was a BDS and maybe another Scottish race up there. So there's a bunch of more domestic races that had a good, had a few races on that track. So there was a few boys that really knew it well. Danny Hart been up there a lot training. Matt Simmons deserves a massive shout out despite some massive mechanicals and an unfortunate puncture in his finals. Like, he was absolutely tearing that course apart. It was unreal. He was for sure going to have his best result, but things just didn't work out. The course was pretty bad. There were some huge holes. Every rider said they were just coming down. They said it was just getting faster and faster, but the holes were getting bigger and bigger. They hadn't done much trail maintenance between those different races, so it was pretty brutal. And then the weather was just stunning the whole time. There wasn't any wet. There wasn't really much midges. It was just sun and gravel, loose and slick.
Yeehaw for global warming, man.
Well, this is the same race, right? We've seen snow at the top. We've seen gale force winds where it gets shut down due to that. That weather usually brings almost better racing. It's almost a grippier race surface when it's wet compared to when it's dry. I mean, when it's dry, those corners just get blown out quicker than normal. They turn into ball bearings. Guys are losing their front end. Like, you can't push as much. I mean, Curtis, you've raced there once, twice?
A couple times. 2010, 2011, and it was dry those years, too. It was warm and very marbly, so sketchy, fast, big holes, but you're still trying to go just as fast and push the edge, and your World Cup downhill racing, so it was interesting to see that they did those two, you call local events, and they didn't do any maintenance because usually they're pretty good about stuff like that because they know they have they're hosting a bunch of madmen on some bikes for the weekend, and that alone with a fresh track, you're going to just, you know, destroy any track. So why they left it, I don't know, but regardless, the racing was amazing, and a lot of surprising amazing things came out of it, so it was interesting.
Yeah, well, definitely one of the more long-standing races on the circuit, you know, that and Mount St. Anne. It's kind of, they change things year after year, a little bit here, a little bit there, they do nothing, but we still keep coming back there. It's definitely the man track, and looking at the results this year, I mean, it's 10 seconds between 1st and 24th, and that's tight. I mean, that's some really, really tight racing. You know, G. Atherton coming down. It was nice to see that guy finally get a win. It's been, what, two...
A few years.
Almost two long years.
Yeah, right there.
He looked really strong.
And it's, I think, a product of that new bike. It's the first time where when I was watching it, rather than, we know he's, like, probably the strongest guy on the circuit, he actually looked like he was getting along with the bike rather than telling the bike exactly what to do underneath him, where he looked very comfortable on it. And, I mean, I think that show's coming down in first, but,
They obviously did their homework with the bike, you know?
Yeah.
The results were proven, you know? It's good to see because G is, he works harder, just as hard as anyone else. And to come up short those few years must have been really frustrating because he's right there. It's not like he was 10 seconds off. He's off a second or two. So, I mean, that's just a testament to how close and how intense the racing is at World Cup, which we all know.
Yeah, exactly. And riding an aluminum bike, I don't know if that's the debate will stir on here. You know, is carbon now out? Is aluminum now in? I mean, everybody wanted a plastic bike there 2 years ago, and then now it's, they're pretty open. They've built a ultra-lightweight aluminum rocket ship, and for them, him and his sister to pull out a first place result on those, very, very, very good, very intriguing, so.
Yeah, GT are going to be pretty bloody happy with that.
Yeah, that's
really.
Who needs marketing at this point?
just put a picture of them crossing the finish line and one on the podium, and I think it sells itself. You know, it's
good for them, man.
It's an awesome success there right away off the start, and I mean, going through here, I mean, I think we've seen the return of maybe some flat pedal thunder. The Gwyn effect, as I call it, maybe has subsided a little bit. Lots of guys have converted, and the two kind of flat pedal faithfuls, Brooke McDonald and Sam Hill, had a stormer. I mean, Sam coming down and at the second split was in second place. Rumor has it he had a bit of a mechanical, his derailleur was jammed in the hardest gear along the motorway, which to be pedaling along that says something for him to only be back in sixth place there. I mean, Daniel, you're Australian. You got to be pretty happy for your countryman.
Like, to come back and do that, and you know, he's had a few rough years there, and beating himself up, and to come down and actually finish one, you know, with a good result, and he was strong all the way down, which is good to see from him. You know, hopefully brings back a return of him.
Yeah,
I think being there in the crowd, I think when his run came down, like, everybody was just like, please, just want to see like the devil himself, like, turning a new result. Yeah. Everyone wants that guy to to just prove that he's still got it. Because those few years of absolute domination he had, and then he's kind of, you know, things have happened, injuries, sponsor change, whatever it might be, but everybody wants him to see, like, put in a full result.
He's a living legend, man.
Yeah.
He's done some unreal things on a bicycle. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah. It was awesome to see. I know I kind of, you know, let out a little yell inside when he came across, mm-hmm. having seen him at Mount St. Anne years ago, race the World Cup there, and put on a clinic when he was on his top form, you know, winning qualifying by 9 seconds and stuff.
Yeah.
When you see, when you're on the sidelines and you watch that happen, it's terrifying and cool to see a guy on flat pedals. He hasn't, you know, I know he's dabbled with the clipless program. He was on them at Sea Otter,
yeah.
Whereas a lot of the other guys have fully given up on it. You know, they've given up on being the flat pedals and gone to being clipped in. Maybe flat pedals aren't dead. Maybe it's all the preparation and...
That's I think that's a debate that can go on forever and ever, man. I think personally, it's just whatever you're most comfortable with. You know, it gives you that
confidence.
The confidence, and
yeah.
racing is all confidence, or 90%.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, a lot of the young kids have said, right? It's almost tidied up their racing. Bryce Lynn and Stevie and those guys saying that.
Eckloff was on clips this weekend as well. Like he wants it, and he put him on, and it meant he had to rein in some of those. Sideways whipping through the air because he didn't feel comfortable with it, but you know, it's helped him. But Brooke McDonald, to come through that last section, like, he made up some serious time in the end because he didn't have a, compared to looking at the splits, wasn't as good as many others. Like his like the last split there, he was absolutely pinned. And I mean, the guy's got, didn't they measure calves once with Kavarik, and he's got bigger calves than Kavarik?
I hadn't heard that story, but
I'm sure I saw a TV once, and they measured it, and you know, they were big as full grown tree trunks, I think. So
is it the power of the beard? Do you think that's I see if you, you know, after Stevie rocking the beard last year, going for the Bushman look? I mean, I know Brooke's a bit of a loose cannon, pretty relaxed kid, just wants to have fun, just another one of the brews. But he's rocking the beard this year.
Him and Stevie, beards on the podium. That was sick to see. I like a bit of beard on the podium.
It's pretty manly. can't argue with it.
Can't argue. Whereas Enduro has, you know, funky mustaches at times from the XC riders that haven't been weeded out yet. You know, the downhillers, the burly mountain men. So
luckily for me, I can't grow any facial hair, so we're good.
So Seb, here's my question for you. You're right on the side of the track. Who had a worse race, Greg Minnaar or Aaron Gwynn?
Oh goodness, that's not for me to say. But I spoke to Gary Perkin after qualifying, just before the finals, and I asked, you know, what happened there. And Gary Perkin said he just spoke to Greg, and he said he was just shaking his head, like he didn't know. He didn't really know. Didn't know where that time had gone so much. He did admit that he hasn't ridden a downhill bike that much this year. He's been doing a lot of endurance, a lot of cross country, a lot of road riding, trying to get really fit. I think his big goal this year is the World Championships in Pietermaritzburg.
Mm.
So he's not been on the downhill bikes. That's why we saw him on the downhill bike at Sea Otter. He's trying to get as many races in as he can, but he just wasn't up there. Gary also told me a story that Minnaar followed G down the top half of the course. Was just blown away by how G was pushing the corners. He was just roosting every corner. Minnaar's following G down, going, "What is this kid doing? Like, what is this kid doing?"
Greg Minnaar is saying that.
Yeah, Greg Minnaar,
current world champion.
Yeah. So that goes to show, like,
well, this is a guy who's won there like 3+ times.
Yeah,
he's no stranger to it. Like, this is a course almost tailor made to brutal, you know, brute man strength.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to be kind of dumbfounded.
Yeah. So he said he just wasn't able to push it like he needed to at the top, and then on the bottom half he said he just felt like he was pedaling squares. He just wasn't used to pedaling that downhill bike in the same way. He just didn't feel like he had the rhythm, spinning circles. Aaron Gwynn, I'm sure the internet commentators have got a lot to say about
Aaron Gwynn. The internet.
I think the
Trek fans today must be just like so happy.
Yeah.
Like,
it's been a few best.
But I don't know. Again, with Gwynn, who knows? It's been a busy winter. There's probably been a lot of other things going on, but I'm sure it's not going to hold him back from doing some spectacular things for the rest of the year.
No, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend. I mean, as they say in motocross all the time, Lavis, your championships are won on your bad days, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Is with a short race series like the UCI keeps putting together for us, Is this, it's, even if he reels off all the wins the rest of the season, is it a slight nail in the coffin?
You know, you could have someone there like Jay who's sitting third and second the whole series, you know, and that 20th place can really hit him hard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's just going to have to keep working on it and being consistent and to get himself back up there. So
yeah, the thing is, there's a lot of points on the line still.
Mm. Yeah.
There's 250 every weekend. So,
yeah.
You know, qualifying and racing alone, and a lot happens, you know. You can go 1-1 qualifying and a win, and it's 250, and Greg can go whatever, say,
yeah,
bad quality in a second, and he, you know, he made up 100 points almost, 90 points. So
yeah,
there's a lot of racing left, and he had a bad weekend. And Greg didn't have a bad weekend, if you ask me. He was only, you know, 1 point something seconds off a podium, so.
No, yeah.
He was right there. It's just he was on the wrong side of the clock, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, and that's it, right? I guess that's the thing. When you look at the result sheet and you don't look at the times, you go, what happened? But
yeah,
when you look at the times, I mean, a second and a half to be back is, that's you know, that's nothing. And it's,
yeah,
it's cool to see in the sport that we're getting to that level where racing's that tight, you
yeah
know? There's still going to be the odd course where somebody's going to pull out a first place and make everybody look bad. They're going to,
yeah,
pull a Sam Hill or a Danny Hart, and
mm-hmm,
it's going to leave everybody at the bottom of the course scratching their head, kind of going, what did we do wrong? I had a pretty good run until I got to the bottom and saw what he did. So, you know, going through that, there were some, you know, very, very strong results, I think, from a lot of different guys there. We saw the return of Troy Brosnan after a lot of his injuries last year. I think the big shocker was Greg Williamson being on the podium.
Absolutely.
In the hot seat for as long as he was. So,
10th place, solid, man. Beat,
yeah,
a lot of big names, and good for him, man.
Young,
yeah,
guy with a lot ahead of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, very, very much so. And, you know, it's the first round of the year, and, you know, there's all the anomalies, right? There's all these things. The nice thing is we're going straight into another race this weekend, rather than a couple weeks off where maybe these guys start overthinking stuff, thinking they need to train harder. It's just the first round, you know? The jitters are out of the way. A lot of them, it was just a skip across to Val d'Isol this weekend. They're going to they're going to another track that pretty much requires two pedal strokes, one out of the starting gate, and you know, maybe one past the finish line corral at the end of the day. It's we're going to the original man track that Sam Hill, you know, pretty much made history, unfortunately, for all the wrong reasons, at Worlds years ago. You know, is this going to be good for a lot of guys like that? They're going to go in and just...
Can you build from that? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, is this just a building block where do we see Sam Hill back this weekend, you know? Like, or do we see Bryce Lynn finally, you know, now that he's clipped in, go down one of these courses that's tailor-made for, you know, his loose style on that V10 and just monster truck his way down through there?
Yes.
Who is willing to risk it, man?
Yeah.
That track is... It's got high consequences, and it's all about commitment. I guess any track is, but I can't wait, man. Sam Hill, Gwynn, Greg, everyone. Mark Beaumont's won there before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Niefling's been up there in the past,
yeah,
and, you know,
Stevie Smith, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's riding really, really
good. Steve Smith for Prime Minister.
Everyone talked last year that it was seeing Brooke McDonald and Stevie Smith finally win a World Cup both last season. And they were breaking into that very small number of people that have ever won a World Cup race. I can't remember the number now, but it's a tiny amount of people that have ever won a race.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talked about, is this the new guard coming in? I think these results of the weekend kind of say, yeah, it wasn't just a fluke. It wasn't
absolutely
just a one-off. Like, Brooke and Stevie are real contenders now.
Absolutely.
I mean, real contenders. So,
I think we're going to see some exciting racing this weekend. I mean, Red Bull pulling it through with their live broadcasts. I mean, all the cameras they have on track. I mean, it's an exciting time to watch downhill racing. It's accessible on so many different levels. You know, you just bring up the internet, watch it. There's no hokey this or that. You got Warner yelling away, and I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens, so what goes on there. So. But let's change gears up here, guys. Let's go into our first section, and what I'd like to talk about is the black box program, something that, Curtis, you're kind of part of. You've helped test with them. You've actually tested products before they started doing what they're up to right now.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you can kind of take us into what the corporation's doing there with boxer forks and drivetrains. I mean, I'm not asking for the internals, but I mean, I think we can all see what's going on the outside of all these parts. They're looking very familiar to ones that are on my my XC bike here right now and on Seb's XC bike.
Yeah, a bunch of exciting things coming out soon or being worked on at least. You know, we had the Pike come out this year, which was just an amazing success. You know, the Pike is it's a game changer. It really is. It's been said, but it is, man. It's the damper itself, how reliable it is, the way it feels. So with that technology in that fork and, you know, being tried out in the Boxer, as we've seen at Fort William on the Vital and the websites, man, the Boxer just got even stronger, you know. And there's some other stuff floating around in the drivetrain stuff. So the XX1 came out last year, and same thing again, you know.
Yeah.
It made the bike that much better. Game changer.
Hashtag it, game changer.
Yeah, just a lot of things got resolved with that. And, I mean, it's just had a great welcoming from everyone. And now it's being trickled down into DH rigs. And
yeah.
TH rigs are just going to get even cooler now.
I was positive that we were going to see downhill bikes with the XX1 chainring on because of how well it holds a chain. And chain retention is a massive part of downhill racing. I'd heard rumors that there's this downhill cluster and mech coming on, and sure enough, there it was at Fort William.
Mm-hmm.
7 speeds. It's got the clutch, very similar to the XX1 in terms of it's got a horizontal parallelogram.
Yeah.
There's a few other nifty roll 'em jigs and bits and pieces in there, and we saw it on 3 riders' bikes, Aaron Gwynn, Sam Hill, and Stevie Smith. Apparently, it had already been at 3 races before Fort William, and no one had noticed. It'd been at Port Angeles. The 2 Port Angeles race on Aaron Gwynn's bike.
Which were mini World Cups by all standards. Everybody in the media was there, and it's...
And
yeah,
no one spotted it.
Well, it was, I got a
it's
good
because
laugh
Sven wasn't there. That's why.
Yeah. Sven wasn't yelling at them what's going on. Everybody was too concerned about the supposed Olin shock, I guess, on the back of the demo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I have no idea about that.
But, yeah, I mean, Curtis, I guess you're kind of the best person to ask because you did quite a bit of testing with Specialized years ago, back when you were racing downhill with a smaller cluster, and as I guess it was to do a lot with the spacing of the rear end at the same time. What stiffness, how many gears do you need, how many gears do you not need?
Yep.
I mean... What's the best solution? Do you need a full cluster? Do you not need a full cluster?
I personally think for downhill racing, you do not need a full cluster.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like when I wanted to change gears, I wanted there to be a difference. When you went from a 23 to 11 cog, when you shifted one gear, it wasn't that much of a difference.
Yeah.
I wanted more. So I wanted one click to be more efficient instead of, you know, banging twice and you go from the 23 down to 17. You would maybe go from a whatever 23 down to a 17, but you're on a 7 cog, you know. So it was just I thought more efficient, you know, less weight, simpler, just a direction I thought it needed to go, and it did work, you know.
Yeah.
It was maybe a little ahead of its time in a way.
Yeah.
So it was cool.
Well, it's interesting with the new one. I mean, online there they're already saying that the reason why they went to it is they wanted, rather than having to shift multiple gears at once, right, you can hit it once and there's actually quite a huge difference in between each ring. So rather than upshifting multiple times and downshifting multiple times, one click is actually doing quite a bit of difference. It's not just a cut down cluster. It's a huge difference.
Yeah. It's interesting. I spoke with John Chancellier, like the Don Juan of the Black Box program, and he was saying that it's quite fortunate now they've got Aaron Gwynn, who's an ex-Shimano racer, and he's moved over to SRAM, and they're really pleased to have someone that's got experience on other products. Usually the SRAM athletes, they've been on SRAM for a while. So you get used to certain things. So Gwynn, as soon as he got on, they said, okay, what do you like or what do you not like about our stuff? And one of the first things he said is how you couldn't go double down like you can on Shimano. And they said, okay, so you can shift 2 gears, but... why do you need to shift 2 gears? And he said, well, I need that difference, just like you were saying, Curtis.
Yeah, some of the
traction. It gave them this great insight to be able to flip things up. They've been as having the this new 7-speed black box program. They've had Sam Hill, who was on the microdrive system that Curtis was saying about. They've got these riders that have got a great experience, and they're really using the racing program to kind of change things up. Whether or not you or I really need this stuff on our bikes in the bike park where we don't even use a chain, certainly not tomorrow night, that's a different thing. It's interesting to see a company trying to do every little thing that they can to make their riders' lives better, which is pretty impressive. We saw Shimano this weekend. I went around and looked at G. Afton's bike, Mark Beaumont's bike. These are the GT races with Shimano, full Shimano. And they've got cut down pluses as well. They're down to, I think it was 8 on Mark Beaumont's and 6 on G. I could be wrong, I'll look at my notes, but that is effectively just a cut down cluster. Yeah. They have nothing, there's no real difference in the spacing, they've just cut it down. You just don't need all that extra gear. You don't need a big granny gear. They're not going up there. It's not super deep.
They were essentially eliminating the middle gear. They're double clicking. That's what they're doing. So it makes sense. Yeah. Absolutely,
I think you're going to have, it's more almost tailor-made, right? Especially with Worlds coming up in Pietermaritzburg, where it's going to be a pedally track, but there's some sections where you're going to need to, upshift. You only want to upshift once, into another gear, just to be in a little bit better out of coming out of that next corner. But it's cool to see them. The wheels are churning again, and the black box program's kind of in full force. Where, us as well, for myself and Seb and Daniel as consumers on the sideline, going, that's awesome. Like, what is that stuff? I want it. Whereas in the last couple of years, it kind of almost had stalled out a little bit. We weren't really seeing the same innovative stuff that was going on. Obviously, we can't talk about the Boxer, but we know there's one floating around, a couple on the Whistler Bike Park right now in the front of some steeds, so we might see if it actually might get its first official win tomorrow night with Adam Billinghurst, but...
We'll see how that goes.
We'll be right back with more Off Track Podcast in just a second.
Studio, you're a busy guy. Lots has changed in a very short period of time in the last kind of year for you, and even more so in the last few months. But bring us up to speed with what's new this past winter.
Well, last year I partaked in some I raced downhill, and then I took on some enduro racing. It was an idea of some of the guys that specialize, who are just, we've always rode trail bikes together, and I thought I could be pretty good at it, considering some of my strengths and stuff. So I gave it a shot last year, and I was pretty successful at it. But most of all, I had fun. It was something new. It was fresh. And so we decided after last season that I would just take it on solely, focus on it. So yeah, for 13, I'm just riding trail bikes, man, racing enduros. And so far, loving it. I have a little break here. I'm in Whistler hanging out and doing some filming for Red Bull and just riding the bike park. So yeah, it's a little break, but it's super busy till the end of October.
Yeah. Super busy. So yeah, we all ride trail bikes, and that's the fun thing about it. I guess that's where enduro's popularity is kind of taken off. It's the same format that we ride a bike in. You take your time cruising up to where you're going to start, and then you pin it on the downhill. It's a wicked formula, and it's cool to see that it's taking off. Maybe talk to us a little bit about how there's a lot more sponsors coming into it. It was eaten up pretty quick. As soon as it was fed to the masses, and I know there's downhill teams that said they wouldn't have money for athletes, and then you race enduro. Oh, what do you need? We've got full funding for you. Maybe you can kind of give us some insight of from a rider's perspective, of how that feels to be in a sport that's taking off that quick.
Feels good. I mean, us as in North America, we're finally latching on to what's been going on in France and Italy for quite some time now, and we're just now jumping on, and I think it's being well received. There's still some people out there that kind of don't believe in it, but I think you need to go out there and race it and see what it's all about, and I think you will enjoy it, because like you said, it's, I feel like it's mountain biking at its core, and that's what I did yesterday. Just went and climbed some hills and rallied the descents in Squamish with some friends. So it's good to see. It makes sense why the industry is behind it. It's trail bikes. It's a bread and butter. It's what the majority of people have as a bicycle, whether it's 100 mil to 160 mil. You know, downhill bikes to me are still amazing. I absolutely love them. But I feel like you need the proper terrain to really reap the benefits of it. Whistler.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know?
I agree 100%. I probably wouldn't own a downhill bike if I didn't have the bike park in my backyard. Mm-hmm. It's just not a functional tool in my day-to-day life. Yeah. And I don't know. Daniel, I mean, you're Australian. You guys love shuttles to a T down there. Yeah, you guys will shuttle some old riverbed. And that's what it is. But it's...
I'm interested to hear what you were just saying there about like America catching on, because... Yeah, there seems to be quite a distinct difference between Europe and North American enduro racing.
Yeah.
What do you think some of the biggest differences that you've seen? Because you've traveled, you've done the North American Enduro Series, you've been over in Europe racing, you're doing the World Enduro Series.
Yeah, it seems, us in North America, we're kind of all over the map right now, because we have a few that were very similar to, well, not very similar, but kind of similar to the Italian style. So it's kind of like a big day, some climbing and multiple descents. Or you have Winter Park, which is all lip access, which is similar to the way the French do it. I kind of like the whole Winter Park and French style. But at the same time, like, the Italian way is amazing. And again, I love the Oregon ones.
Yeah.
So, what's going to be the official, like, what's in true enduro? Who knows, man? It's still kind of young. And I personally think every country or, you know, area is kind of going to stick to what they know. Because I know the French aren't going to change their way after 9 years. And the Italians, the same thing. Yeah.
And what about, we're seeing the first World Enduro Series, Punta Ala. Everyone was having to wear full face helmets. Was that something that the organizers put forward, that you have to wear full face?
I thought that was a good idea.
And then the next week we had, I think it was the following week, we had the first North American Enduro Series, the Oregon Series, and everyone seemed to be in half face helmets with goggles, and like a lot of people in skin tight lycra, no knee pads. Right?
Yeah, that's not such a great idea. You know, the Punta Ala, for sure, because the terrain itself was very challenging, and the consequences were high, especially on stages 1 and 2. So, like, you need a full-face helmet. You know, I spoke to a few riders, and they were like, man, I would never go ride that trail after for fun, because it was too gnarly for trail bikes. So, and then you go to North America, and Hood River was not as gnarly, but it's still, like, consequences, and they let it be up to the rider's discretion. You know, they threw it out there. Like, their full faces are recommended, but not necessary. I personally thought they weren't recommended, but knee pads should have been. I didn't wear knee pads, but that's, like, my call, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I didn't want to do, but I thought they should. And maybe, like, beginners in sports need full faces, because there's definitely some sections in there that people can get hurt on. And We should be careful of that stuff, you know. Bend, Oregon, half shell all day long.
Yeah.
You know, it's flat. But we need to learn from what the French and Italians are doing, just to kind of observe what the heck's going on. And if, you know, I say if anything, kind of make full faces more mandatory than what you need to, if anything, just to play safe.
No, the first race, there's a few bits of controversy that kind of arose after the fact. There was princes wearing their helmets or tiaras.
Yeah.
And there was riders supposedly changing wheels.
Showing up a month early.
Yeah, lots of interesting
in the back of an
things.
ATV, like, maybe now, truck.
I bumped into Chris Ball at the weekend in Fort William as well. He's the head of the Enduro World Series, and we kind of had a chat, and I spoke to some other people, and they said, you know, it's just working out these early pains, and he said everyone seemed to be pushing the limits of where the rules were,
what they can get away with.
Yeah. And how did it feel like going to that first race? Well, I mean, was it a tense atmosphere? I mean, it seems to have changed the enduro quite a bit. It looked like, from the outside, it looked like everyone was raised their game.
He nailed it, man. Like, because we spoke about earlier how more companies are getting involved, there's more money.
Well, invested interest is huge now, you know?
Yeah, and on a professional level, the fun factor has kind of gone away a little bit just because it's become more serious. There's more money on the line, and like, you have previous world champions showing up, Nico, Fabian preparing, pushing the limits, these gray areas, you know, finding out what they can and can't do. And I personally thought like it was World Cup racing on trail bikes. Like, yeah, it was like a mini World Cup, ragged terrain, very high level of racing, you know, like it was, which is great, you know. But some of the fun factors definitely taken away. But that's only due to the, I guess, is it success of the sport? But it's still young. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. We'll see what happens, you know.
You know, another few weeks until that next round. It'll be interesting to see what transpires, you know. The first one done, and everybody's back to riding and training, and maybe going back to the drawing board as far as what they need to step up their game for that next one. I mean, Burrell pretty much saying like he knew what stage he was going to take all the risks on to make it happen.
Yeah, and like Burrell did his homework, man. He really did. Like, he prepared his fit, but most of all, he was there a month early, and he knew the tracks, so he knew, he timed them all. He knew the long one, the one with the take the most chances on, and he's fought in Burrell. You can't take anything away from him. Two-time world champion. He's an amazing bicycle rider.
Philosopher and scientist and everything rolled into
one. They broke it down. Yeah, you know?
Does everything to the best.
How was your race, and what did you learn from that race going into the second round?
A race was, result-wise, not what I wanted, but it was good. Like, I knew I was riding well. I guess you just say I didn't race well. First stage, I was okay, like, time-wise. You know, it's not necessarily result-wise, but time-wise, like, gap, that's what you're concerned about, the consistency throughout the weekend. But on stage two, I had a pretty massive blow-up. It wasn't even on the gnarly part. It was kind of like on a fast straight away, and it was kind of slick, and I lost my front wheel, blew up, and bars are all twisted, so I'm off the bike trying to straighten out bars, and so it was like lots of time. So, but that's racing, you know. So, and then, but the next stage, I pulled it back together. I was fourth, so I was just right behind the boys.
Yeah.
You know, only Graves, Fabian, and Jerome got me. And then fourth stage, I was time-wise, I was really good. I think I was maybe like 12th, but time-wise, I was right there. So I blew it all second stage. But overall, it was a success, you know. I'm in one piece. I had fun, got it out of the way, but I'm ready for more this year. We got six more, so it should be good.
So did you know what's coming up at the next round in France? What's changed and prepared? I mean,
I spoke with Jerome a bit, Clements, and kind of gave me the lowdown, and the France, like we spoke about earlier, has their own way of doing things. And so the French are going to be, it's going to be a bit more equal playing field.
Yeah.
We'll, they'll mark the track on Friday, tape it. Saturday, we'll get up, do stage one, or get to stage one, do one practice run, and you cannot stop. So you have to continue throughout.
Kind of
and
a parade lap style, just keep moving.
Yeah. Go right back up, and then you race that track. After that one, you go to stage two, same thing. One practice run. So guys aren't there like months before, you know. Some people will have advantage only because it's their hometown.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it won't be anything like Puntales. So
yeah.
Be a bit more even. Who can hang it out? Who can read terrain really well? I heard Nico is amazing at that.
Just adapt on
just
the fly,
adapting, yeah. Reading terrain and looking ahead. So.
Well, that's I think a huge part of what enduro is and what it should be is that it's new tracks, it's thinking on the fly, it's that other bike handling skill like you need to have to do that type of riding rather than you have it memorized, you know every rock in your head, you know where you know your breaking point is, you've got it dialed, and then it's just a computer program you run through your head. Okay, coming out of the gate, this is when I need to brake. And that's, I think, a huge asset for you. I mean, you are a extremely talented guy. You're a good course reader, you pick up on the little things, and you're a strong guy, you think on the fly. I think the next round is definitely gonna
What about Puntala? Like, a lot of people, they were there for a month in advance and whatever, and then a lot of people were shuttling in between races.
Yeah.
Ryan, tell us, were you shuttling for your practice laps, or did you ride?
I wish I was. We were, it was like a half shuttle. So I was actually, Graves got there the same day I did. So Graves and I did a bunch of pre-riding together, and because a rental car had like 4 inches of ground clearance, and it was up this rugged road, we can only drive up maybe halfway, and Graves and I were forced to pedal like every lap. So dudes were doing like 3 to 4 runs per lap that we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were wasting more energy climbing. So it's our fault, right? We didn't have a truck, or we didn't book a shuttle.
But at the same time, I think it's been sort of like Chris Ball said. He said that's going to be shut down. There's going to be no shuttling in the future.
I totally agree.
If that's not the spirit of the race. I mean, I know here at Crankworks, Darren Canad as well, he's like, no shuttling. We're going to make sure there's no shuttling.
See, I think you should, because it...
No doubt to anyone coming to Crankworks, it's going to be barbed wire on all the roads.
I think it should, because the spirit of enduro, like going out and really earning your laps, you know, and like, all right, like I got to be smart because I only have 5 days and I need to conserve energy, have energy for the race days. So I'm only going to do 2 on that stage. I know it well enough. I'm, you know, third time's a charm on that one. Not just like I'm going to pound out 10 on that day.
Yeah.
Go to the next one. And it will definitely make it a bit more even, and there's more strategy involved for sure. And I get, like I said, spirit of enduro.
Yeah.
So otherwise, it just becomes like mini downhill races. The guys are memorizing every nook and cranny, and
they know if it's a dry course, run this line. If it's a wet course, run that line. And that's
3 weeks early, a month early, just
everything.
Yeah, they know.
You can have everything dialed. So.
Yeah.
Here's kind of an interesting question. I mean, what is the best piece of new technology you guys have for enduro riding? Like, what is the thing that you guys cannot live without within?
Tiny pack.
This is the future. Oh man. XX1 to me, man. It's all about energy management to me. It's a wide range of gearing, so climbing the hill's easy. Then you have it's there for the descents. Plenty of gear there for going on fast descents. And like I said, it's light, efficient, simple and clean.
So not 29-inch wheels, 650B wheels.
Man, that's a whole nother debate. That personally, I think that comes down to like rider preference and like what you like and what you feel good on.
Cool.
If Specialized made a really sick, really sick fat bike, would you race it?
If I felt amazing on it, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm faster for sure."
So you're not riding. You're not riding 29-inch because it's a corporate edict.
No, absolutely not. You know, I'm fortunate. I've been with Specialized forever, and they're not like that at all, man. Especially with me, because they're like family, and I wanted to try it, and they thought I should try it, and they let me make my own decisions. So they don't. They pressure colors on me. That's what they do. Well, no, you need to run the white one because that's going to be whatever, you know? That's what they control. Yeah. So they...
If that's all they're controlling, that is a good thing at the
end of the day. They want me to race on whatever I'm most comfortable on. So... Yeah.
There's another thing as well is with the enduro racing is those products have got to last for the entire day or weekend of riding. There's stickers on, and I know we heard rumors of certain riders kind of bending those rules, but... The product has to last. It's not, we saw a video with Nico Vordios talking about wheels, and whereas in downhill racing, oh man, I saw it this weekend at Fort William, stacks of wheels in each pit, ruined, chopped out, hubs chopped out, thrown away. Those rims have done like a few laps, if anything. With enduro, those products have got to last, but they've still got to be high performance. Like,
that's part of the challenge, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have these courses that are very demanding, and other ones are maybe a bit flatter, so you want something that rolls faster, it's easier. So it's up to you to pick what you think is going to work right for you over the course of the day. Like, all right, I can kind of risk it on these stages, or take it easy, or this isn't going to work at all, so I got to go full downhill tire. I think it's part of the fun.
We saw that kid from the GT team. Was he
Martin Mays?
Yeah. And he had full downhill tires and flat pedals.
Flat pedals.
At 16 years old.
Shredder.
That good video, though, like coming out of the gate, he looks like he's got size 13 shoes and size like 9 feet.
Yeah.
Big old clown feet.
When they see him, he's on flat pedals and downhill tires and he's still got the result, blown away. So I suppose it is, depending on what you think is going to work.
Confidence.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. So that's part of the challenge. Like I said, we're going to go to every venue and you're going to have to go through that at every race. Tire selection, wheels, what's going to survive, what's not, like
what about water. The pits? Are you looking at each other across the pits and like, or through the weekend, like, kind of going,
go kick some tires, just kind of see?
Like, God, Nico's running those tires, man. I don't know. He's running cut down cross marks.
Like in a way, you're like, man, that's really, is he going to run like a semi slick? You know, you're like, oh, could that pay off in stage 3 and 4? Oh, man, that's going to be horrible in 2, though. So, maybe some people. I personally don't get like caught up in that, and I need to make myself feel good in my own head, and I need to worry about that, you know. And maybe sometimes I look, but I just try to get on like what I'm most comfortable with. Like in Punta Ala, I had my Stump Jumper Evo and then my Enduro 29, and that was my dilemma, was which bike to ride or race. And I personally thought the Stumpy was the best, and I went with what I thought was going to work, and did that just based on the fact that it was a long day, a lot of pedaling, and stages 3 and 4 were not necessarily the most demanding terrain-wise.
Yeah.
They were kind of more flowy, maybe like Santa Cruz style. And so, and then Stumpy's very capable on the rugged stuff. So
safe to say we'll see you on the Enduro at France?
Yeah, Enduro is going to France. Yes, with some beefy tires.
One bike, beefy
tires.
What are
you doing? Are you taking both Enduros, the 26 and the 29? And you're going to choose between them? Or are you...
You know, what's funny is after Punta Ala, I went home for a bit. And, you know, I went home and I wanted to try some things just to take any doubts out of my mind, right? Not just based on Punta Ala, but on some other things I did. And I went and rode my Enduro 26. I went on one ride, and I was like, yep, I'm going to hang that bike back up. Not that it's a horrible bike, but it's because I really like the Enduro 29, man. I really do. The wheel size, it feels more proportioned, the way it rides.
What wheels are you running on your Enduro 29?
Carbon Traverses. They're like just an all-mountain, beefy carbon wheel. Super reliable. Knock on wood, I haven't damaged any of those wheels. Don't even touch them. I'm bike parking them so far.
I
for
did
a few
see
days.
You hit Dwayne Johnson the other day on that bike.
Yeah.
Toed in blind.
What?
Yeah. Following Billinghurst on laps.
I can't wait. Tomorrow night, if we get a 2-9 when the Fat Wednesday beeline, the world's going to cave in.
We just need to start a forum on one of the internet websites and it'll just implode. It'll just crumble in on itself.
I will say this. And
Fontana, Sea Otter, Beeline Chambers. The trifecta
of the world.
Of course, I follow Billinghurst on Beeline and he's hauling ass. So he's going to be tough to beat along with Kavarik. So
is he going to be tired then?
He might be because he's searching for the million. He's
going for that mark.
We were riding yesterday, not yesterday, the day before, and he did lay down in front of me. He took a dirt nap. Not a dirt nap, but he crashed pretty hard. We were on a smoke and mirror, so he's even sore right now.
I did see him today with a tensor bandage around his leg.
I said,
what happened? And he was like, well, I had Allen keys in my pocket, and I Charlie horsed the crap out of myself.
he put the tree, and he just lawn darted.
Well, one last question for you. What does the future hold for Enduro? I know that's a pretty big open-ended question after only one Enduro World Series round, but what do you see, and where do you think it's going to go?
I hopefully it's here to stay. It's mountain biking as core. It's a bike that all of us own, and it's a really fun format, and it's easily raced anywhere as long as you can climb up hills. You don't need a shuttle or a lift. It's easy to do as long as you know how to work some timing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's here to stay. People are enjoying it, and on a very high like professional level. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great success after Punta Ala. So we'll see what happens by the end of October.
Just a taste of your skin, stop your
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with more of the Off Track Racing Podcast. Some of our show questions that we had put out there. So for everybody listening at home, if you guys ever have a question, you can just hit us up at Twitter. That's @off_track MTB. Ask any questions that you may have there for specific riders that we got on, or send an email through to offtrackmtb@gmail.com. You can get a hold of us there. So we got two questions that came through today. One is a group question, and the question is, to bike warm or not to bike warm? That is the question.
Oh, the trip home, folks.
The internet's going to melt.
You know, speaking about that, you know, there is a way, because, you know, we see, like, teams like JGR in the motocross industry where they'll heat their tyres up, and, you know, all of Supercross, when it was cold, they just had tyre warmers on. They went out to the track with tyre warmers on, you know, to get their compound, you know, correct. So, you know, it is, but it isn't. You know, you know, they said it's for the fluid and the suspension and stuff, you know, but
what happens if you're heating up your brakes at the same time?
It soon gets hot, you know, it gets hot enough just riding a bike that quick, you know, and the thing we have problems with is overheating so quick. So, it's an interesting thing, so.
Yeah, I spoke to Monkey, the track mechanic. I asked his take on it, and he was like, "Oh man,
Monk Dog,
keeping it real from San Diego, Monk
and
Dog."
They talked about it, and when they talked about it, they talked about a much smaller system, so you could just slide a bit of the bike in, or keep, like,
well, similar suspension to the black box program where they were just putting fork warmers
on.
Yeah,
they did that years ago. Like, so, they talked about it, and he said when it finally turned up, this giant tent, he was like, "Oh man, all you're gonna do is on cold mornings when we have to race, you're gonna get all the riders hanging out inside that damn thing."
And it's chilling up the top.
It'd be interesting.
I'm warming up right now.
Let's see if we're gonna see Brooke get his tip trainer in there. If it rains out and snows out at Val d'Isol this weekend, I don't know. So,
I don't know, man. I feel like maybe it's only really necessary on the extreme days where it's really cold at Fort William. It's just really, really bad. It's got to be horrendous, I think, for the most part. Otherwise, the riders are so good that they know where to have the rebound set and compression, because it does heat up 45 seconds into the run, and then it's dialed and they can adapt. So, I don't know. It's cool that the limits are being pushed and tried.
I mean, this is the same company that went to a wind tunnel before, you know, Worlds years ago, and had aero wheels and numbered plates that looked like, you know, some sort of something from Tron. You know, these are the guys that tried all that stuff, so it's not a surprise. But
if it gives Brooke that 1.2% more confidence,
Martin White is very anal. But, you know, he's going to pick out every single little advantage he can find. And I think that's great. It's kind of cool that he's, like, trying to think of all these different ways of doing it. And even if it doesn't work performance-wise, it's great for him from publicity-wise.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, look at the amount of, like, Trek logos you're going to see all over the websites. And everyone's talking about it. We're talking about it right now.
Yep, absolutely.
Would we have been talking about Trek?
I'll give him some marketing advice. He needs to brand the box, not just have a black box. There should be a box with logos all over it, so at least you are looking at it and you're understanding what all the sponsors are, rather than it's just going to be a black cube at the top of the race course, right? That would be my kind of one thing of it, but interesting to see nonetheless. So
the hot box, though, interesting name.
Hot box. Oh yeah.
Hot box. I mean, like, what riders out there are still, like, getting high before they run? Because we've heard about a bunch of riders.
Oh man, I don't want to drop any names.
And then, of course, we have one more question, and this one's kind of directed right at you, Lavis, and it's not even about mountain bike racing, but is Ryan Villopoto beatable? You're each and every round, you're each and every round of Supercross.
I scratch my head every weekend about this guy. You know, the way he trains and the way him and Eldon work, you know, is unbelievable. You know, you'll see him come to the track, you know, and walk the track, and, you know, he'll already know where he's going to go and where he wants to put his wheels. And just the way he can turn a bike just on the spot, you know, he won't use the berm. He'll just turn it on the spot and still be as fast as anyone. You know, Ryan Dungey, he's determined.
Yeah.
He's very determined to beat him. You see him every weekend there. And then you got a couple of young guys like Barsha and, you know, that have got the raw speed, you know, if they can stay on.
Yeah.
I do think that James is holding back quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think you'll start to see him open up more and he'll get faster and faster. He just sort of get a couple of races under his belt and then, you know, you'll see the old James back.
It's amazing to watch. I mean, I know it's off topic, but it was funny to get that question through just because... The guy who sent it knows you're at each and every round. We put it out there that you're a mechanic and stuff, and
it's hard. You know, he's fast.
He's got the confidence too.
And you know, you'll see him. He knows he's fast. You know. But you know, once he gets a bit of pressure, you know, that's when he starts making mistakes.
Yeah.
And Dunge knows that, but he just can't get close enough.
Can't make it happen.
You know? And once he will, you know, that's when you'll see.
Yeah.
You know.
It's gonna be an exciting rest of the season. So yep.
Love it.
But let's just go straight into you, with you, Daniel. I mean, so, like I said, man of many titles when we introduced you there. You're a privateer racer.
Yeah.
You used to race a lot more than you currently do.
Yeah.
We'll see you at Mount St. Anne later on this summer.
Definitely.
But at the same time, you are the Rock River Yamaha mechanic, wrenching on bikes throughout all the Supercross and outdoors. And a big part of what you're doing is actually training with some of these guys, trying to get them into fighting shape. Ben LeMay and all the other riders. Maybe give us some insight of exactly what you're up to.
Well, I started off, I went down there and I was just training with Ben, just helping him with his mountain bike and his cycling. And then I met one of his friends, Chris Johnson, who's now on the team. And then he needed a mechanic at the time, and I knew my way around a bike pretty good, so I took it on and I said, "All right, let's do this." And then I continued to keep working with Ben, and we're living in Huntington, just cycling, you know, getting all our gym work, you know, getting him out of the track, making sure he's doing his motos, you know, he's there and he's working for it.
Yeah.
And as well as Chris, you know, doing his practice bike mechanic, and then being in the shop, getting the race bikes ready and stuff like that. And then we're just being keep going, plodding along, and wrenching for Chris every weekend, and still working with both of them, you know, just as much as anything. But they're getting, you know, like Ben, he's a way better cyclist than he is mountain bike, but, you know, and then Chris, he's a better mountain biker than cyclist, so.
Yeah, it blew me away when you told me that the other day. I was kind of like, you know, I look at what these guys do, and I view them as crazy. I'm like, they seem like they would just get on a mountain bike, or a downhill bike, and, you know, they could probably roll up and beat all of us kind of thing, because they're not operating a, you know, 200-pound machine. They're on a, you know, if they're on a mountain bike, it's, you know, 40 pounds, some 40 pounds nowadays.
So different.
it's funny watching, you know, Chris, because they have both have different skills and stuff. And now Ben's a top 15 guy every weekend, you know. He's been pushing into the top 10, and, you know, he did his knee. He tore his MCL. And then we've just been building him back up slowly and slowly. He come back, he's done two races this weekend, last weekend and the week before.
Yeah.
And he's been top 15 so far. So we're hoping to get him in top 10, you know. We've got full factory support, you know, from everything, you know. And Chris has been out hurt, you know. He's had a string of bad luck. So at Vegas, he got run over in the whoops, he crashed. And he'll be back next weekend at
Bud's Creek
next weekend. Yep, and he should be good. He'll be, you know, we're hoping to come out and be top 20.
Yeah,
you know, in the lights. So it's good working with them too, and, you know, being at the race, also working for Chris, but being there to help Ben, you know, with his confidence and stuff like that, and making sure he's ready. So,
well, it's kind of cool to, you know, like you've come in as a mechanic with them, and especially how you've kind of gone into where you're training them a little bit, yeah. especially coming from your race background.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
you did represent Australia as a junior at Worlds
yeah.
back at Mount St. Anne and everything.
Yeah,
and,
that was good.
I mean, how does that feel? I mean, it's kind of cool. I mean, you're coming from a sport where you have to log on to the internet to see it.
Yeah.
And mountain biking, most people view mountain biking as still we're wearing Lycra on, you know, cross country bikes with fanny packs.
Yeah, definitely.
where motocross is, it's on ABC and Speed Channel
every
weekend. So.
It was good. I learned, like, you know, working with Emil, when Emil, you know, gave up mountain biking and, you know, went to moto, that's sort of when I learned, where to go with it.
Yeah. And that's Emil Cavalier, right?
Emil Cavalier, yeah.
Yeah.
And just being around him and still, because he was still helping me with downhill at the time for juniors and being around and going moto with him and the way he trained and stuff. And then that just sort of, just all his, you know, role model sort of thing, just, you know, I just took everything on and learnt from there. And then when I started motocross, you know, speaking with Eldon and, you know, speaking with Lopes, you know, I spoke to Lopes, you know, back and forth, trying to, you know, get ideas and work, you know,
yeah.
just to learn. And, you know, he was really good with me because he works with the TLD team.
Yeah.
So he was really good with me and he taught, you know, he taught me a lot what to do with them and stuff like that. So it was good to, you know, have him there and stuff.
It's cool to see how, like, Lopes, yeah, has stepped into a training role with a pretty established team out
there.
Yeah,
he's got three guys.
Yeah, and you know, Jesse Nelson, Christian Craig, and is he working? He's working Sealy 100%.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see how that's happening, and especially how mountain biking is becoming a pretty big role within these motocrossers.
Definitely.
I mean,
nearly all of them now, you know, that you'll see them, they all cycle,
yeah.
but a lot of them now, you know, will have mountain bikes. You know,
yeah.
a lot of them are sponsored by Specialized, and you know, and they get a lot of bikes from Specialized, and they all, you know, do it a lot now,
yeah.
you know.
Well, wasn't MC down at one of the Oregon Enduro
Worlds?
Yeah,
he was at Hood River.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doing some testing, hanging out with Fox. He was there for a few days.
So.
And he loves mountain bikes, man. I've ridden with him a couple times,
yeah.
actually,
yeah.
and he's obsessed with it. It's just like I'm obsessed with that moto.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good to see because, like, Specialized is fully backing these guys because
definitely,
it's a
yeah.
training tool. Same with like Trek and Giant. You know, Giant
yeah.
helps out Millsaps. Trek helps out
Dungey,
Carmichael.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it will continue to grow within because
it
makes sense.
And speaking of Eldon and stuff, you know, and he uses mountain biking a lot more for supercross.
Yeah.
And just because of the explosive power, you know,
yeah.
up a quick hill, down, up, you know. But then you see him come to an outdoors, you know, where he'll get him on the bike for an hour and a half, an hour, and, you know, and for the endurance, because, you know,
yeah.
we're doing 30 plus two, so.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's good to, you know, learn and see the difference of how they train and stuff like that, so.
Exactly.
It's, and then it's all about your motos during the week, so, you know, doing your, you know, you go out, some days where you do a 45 and stuff like that, and. You know, we just keep pounding them out and sprints. You know, supercross, I had to learn a lot about, you know, quick sprints. You know, it was like, you know, 5-lap sprint, rest 5 minutes, bang. You know, just constantly. And
well, those guys are sprinting from start to finish.
Yeah,
right?
You just got
to
knock off the laps, bang. And you got to be, and especially for qualifying, if you want a good gate pick,
yeah,
you got to be up there. So it's all about the gate pick and, you know,
yeah.
start is so crucial this year. So.
Yeah. And then, Curtis, do you still use motorbikes as a lot of training in your off-season, or are you kind of...
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah.
I'm just obsessed with them. I just love riding them. So I live in Southern California, and I love getting out there on the tracks and putting in some laps and just getting away from the bike, too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like the crazy, fat, obsessed football fan with them. Like, oh, Supercross is on Saturday. Okay, what time is it on? All right, I'll ride in the morning, and then I'll, you know, eat some food, take a shower, and sit down, watch practice, and...
Hey,
yeah.
I do the exact same thing, and I don't even own a bike.
Yeah, I love it, man. Moto's, it's definitely part of my life. So, yeah, it's good.
Obsessive compulsive, I know, that's for sure. It's a cool sport to see.
It's great for cross training too,
yeah.
like you said, so it's good, pushes me out of my comfort zone and physically too, so yeah, I love it.
Daniel, I mean, because you're in this training role, I mean, what's your take within the mountain bike world? Because it seems like every, it happened before, well, I mean, each and every year at the start of the season, every rider's talking about how they're working with this new trainer. They're working with this new trainer. Is it weird to see riders go to a new trainer at the start of every year? Every off season?
It is. You do see a lot, you know, where, like, I know Millsaps, he works with a triathlete, and hits his training and what he does and stuff like that. And they all change, but, you know, it's whoever works for you, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's how much effort you're going to put in. You know, you can only help someone and push them and push them, but at the end of the day, they're the only one that's going to come out of their comfort zone and really want it. Just like, you know, speaking with Lopes, the way he said, you know, like, he'll have Nelson that's, you know, not as fast, but he'll be better over time, you know, he's smarter. Where you got, like, you know, Christian, he'll try and keep up with Lopes and just burn out. So, you know,
it's not a man you want to try and keep up to at times.
Yeah, and then it isn't, you know, it's who's going to work, you know, well for your whole program.
Yeah.
And what you want out of it, and you know, I'm fortunate I work well with Chris and Ben because they're pretty young, and I'm young myself, so, you know, we work well together, so it's good.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess going into your racing here, I mean, things are going to be, like we said earlier, you're going to be racing Mount St. Anne. What keeps bringing you back to it? I mean, you're an Australian who's worked in the mines, who's now living the Southern California life, hanging out at Huntington Beach and riding moto. I mean, what brings you back to downhilling? Where
you know, it's as I've gotten older and more mature, you know, just I've felt like that, you know, I've gotten a new drive and what I want, you know, I know I can still get it, you know, I just got to work for it and put everything together. And I know it's just mountain biking always brings you back, you know, because you've had those experiences, you know, where you've been that fast, you may have had a massive crash, and, you know, and just the fun flow of it. So
yeah,
I know it's just growing up and getting more mature, I think, and learning, and, you know, more. You know, being smarter. So
smarter. Even though you're the youngest guy at this table right now.
Yeah, I know.
But one thing that really interests me about privateer racing, or just anyone that races, like, I was there at Fort William at the weekend, mm-hmm. and by the end of the weekend, just spectating, I was exhausted.
Yeah.
Just eating bad food, up too much in the sunshine, like, out and about, chatting, and that wasn't even the physical exertion of racing, but it must be, those other things must be similar things that racers would go through. They pack up Sunday night, hit the road Monday, I get to, the guys at the weekend are going to go to Newcastle, 15-hour on the ferry down Amsterdam, Amsterdam drive all the way to Italy, get to Italy, course walk, and it's all over again. Like,
yeah, definitely.
It must be exhausting.
Those weeks where you've only got 1 week. When I did that for the full season in 2010, you know, just in the motorhome, you had to just go straight to the track, you know, make sure, you know, I was lucky I was with Reese Atkinson, Brendan's little brother. And, you know, we shared the driving, and we just, you know, got there and slept and tried to get a cycle in. And, you know, that was one of the most hardest things, just eating clean. You know, keeping up your intake with your vegetables and stuff like that. Otherwise, it just hits you so hard, and then you just, you know, can't perform of what you want. And
you're going to be sharing rooms with other people, so you have to deal with that person snoring different sleep cycles, and then trying to find somewhere to clean your kit. And
dealing with airports.
Yeah, you know, traveling in and out is always, you know, it's different with motocross now. You know, like, I'll fly in Thursday, prep the bike Friday, and set the semi up, and then, you know, Saturday the riders turn up, and then they're gone, and then I rebuild the bike Sunday. So it's good, you know, and it's just, especially with downhill, you know, you got to just always keep those legs going, you know. Don't let the lactic build up and stay nice and fresh.
But it must be hard on those long drives, those quick turnarounds. I don't know how those guys do it.
Yeah.
Does it come back to self-discipline? So that 15-hour ferry ride, instead of, like, hitting the bar and drinking and sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it mean, like, getting the turbo trainer out?
You talking about some Instagram photos that were on the internet there after 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
I was talking to some of the Kiwis. They couldn't wait to get on.
It's, well, I think if you can, you make the sacrifice, if it is financially, is you buy a plane ticket and you just hurry up and get to the next race.
Yeah.
You don't hang out in a ferry and airports all that time.
Yeah.
You just get there.
If you want it bad enough, you know, you'll make it happen, you know.
Yeah, like, so you'll make the right decisions.
Definitely.
Yeah. Or you won't. You'll be young and you just roll the flow and get wasted on the ferry.
Yeah.
Wake up in Italy.
I can understand like putting everything, if you're in the top 5, 10, 20 races in the world, maybe 30, 40, whatever, but if you're battling to qualify for these races, there's so many. I was amazed at Fort William. There's so many privateers out there really putting everything on their line. Their life is in some ways on pause while they put everything into that. And I find it like amazing. I find it heroic and I find it really impressive that people are doing that. But at the same time, like, does everyone have the hope that they're going to break through to the next level?
If you're willing to spend as much money, you know, for to be there every weekend, and you know, and that's one thing I learned from 2010, you know, where I wasn't putting in as much effort, you know, and now that I've gotten older and I think, all right, you know, if I want to be there, you know, I've got to do the work and be able to do the work to get what I want out of it. And, you know, if you don't want to be an 80th place guy, you know, you want to be up there creeping into the 40th, you know, working your way up, you know, you just got to keep working at it. And, you know, that's Villopoto, look at him, you know, he just keeps on going. Now he's, you know, constantly, no one can touch him. And then you've got a guy like Alessi, he'll work as hard as he can every single weekend, and, you know, he'll get there. But in the end, but it just depends how hard you want it, especially, you know, as a privateer. So,
and being in the moment, at the line, you know, this is it, the race is on, and making it all happen. It's so challenging. That's why we all love racing. Like,
you know,
right?
Downhill, one run, you know.
Yeah, you get one shot.
One shot, so, you know, you've got to be smooth, fast, and make it happen.
What's made you choose to do your one race at Mount St. Anne this year?
With
all the courses and all these other locations you can always go to, I mean, what's Mount St. Anne have to offer? Is it due to commitments with the Rock River team?
Yeah,
or
definitely. It's towards the end of the season where I've only got one race left where I can get away for that race and do the downhill race, which is unfortunate. You know, I've got, you know, someone that's there that can help me out for that. And I've always liked Mount St. Anne, and ever since I went there for world champs and I had chicken pox for world champs, you know, I've always wanted to go back and redeem myself. And, you know, and I like the track, it's fast, you know, it's got some big jumps, and, you know, I really like it. So it's just one of my favorite tracks, and it's always good to race. So
definitely a classic, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, after riding it when I was younger, I hold it up there. Those guys, like, it blows my mind how quick they can go down there.
Yeah, you know,
and,
it's a good track.
Similar to Fort William, it's man track.
Definitely,
You know, it's very man track, so.
I've heard the part is good afterwards.
It's very good.
Never has it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They always do well.
The Quebecois know how to party.
Definitely.
The Quebecicans throw it next level. Well, do you guys have any other questions for Daniel, or...?
What's up with these moto dudes just wearing Lycra and mountain bikes? TLD guys, like Cole Seeley and all these guys, like, they have Troy Lee Designs as a great sponsor.
It's funny, like, I'll see Chris come home from road ride, and then, like, you know, I see him, like, 2 hours after the road ride, and he's still got his Lycra on. he's really, you know, they just all run it now. They
love it.
Yeah, they're just all about the Lycra. It's funny, and I come up here and used to wearing Lycra, so it's funny.
So is it funny, we had Palmer come from a snowboard motocross background, come in and explode mountain biking by wearing all the baggy motocross gear, and now we're having the opposite thing happen, all the motocross guys coming in to the mainstream wearing a Lycra, and everyone thinks, again, that's what mountain biking is.
It's funny, you know, even before I started working with them, they were all wearing Lycra. It's just what they must, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like Brayton, Baggett, Villopoto, Seeley, Craig.
Everyone.
God,
all of them.
They're ruining it for everyone.
They were ahead of the time, though. They were all on 29ers, too.
No, one of them wears baggies. They all wear Lycra.
Yeah. They love it.
Yeah.
So does my girlfriend.
probably the only one that I do see wear baggies is Tomac through his dad.
He's gnarly.
Oh, yeah.
I see him wearing baggies all the time.
Have you seen John Tomac in the pits? Like,
yeah, he's at every race.
Do you get to chat to him?
To chat to him a little bit at Vegas. Not really. I'm normally down on the line, and because Chris is normally, you know, racing when Eli's out there. So, But yeah, he's there at every race, you know, he watches, you know, he doesn't really, he's not around too much, he just stands up in the stands and watches, so. But yeah, he's good, you know, I spoke to him a little bit and he said they do a fair bit of training out at Colorado, just mountain biking, doesn't do a lot of road, just more mountain biking and stuff like that, so.
Such a legend, man.
Yeah.
So gnarly, so gnarly.
But I do see he's gone to Treks now, too.
Is he?
Turn up, yeah.
I saw that and Strand picked him up. Yeah, good old HB, tied him in.
Yeah.
Get him in there. Yeah. He'll be on a yellow bike next year. On the beach in Hart-Huntington.
Yeah.
So yeah, guys, let's wrap this thing up. We got Val d'Isol this weekend. What do we... Man track, we already know all about it. It's going to separate the boys out here.
We talk about man track and we've talked about all the men at Fort William, but we should mention the women. Rachel Athen, 10 seconds on all the girls.
Yeah.
She be racing in the men's category?
Would she have qualified? I guess that is the bigger question.
But did you see her tweet? She put out a tweet and she's a lovely girl. I don't think she probably meant to throw the fox amongst the chickens, but she threw out a tweet just saying, I really miss like the days of racing with Sabrina Jonier and
Tracy
Mosley. Yeah. Those were strong girls. Somebody could read into that maybe now that she hasn't got competition.
Rago? I wouldn't count her out, man.
I wouldn't count her out, but 10 second win margin, I mean, that's... It was kind of like, where's the... Hello? Anybody else out there?
She said she had a killer qualifying run. She decimated the girls in qualifying. She said that she had a terrible race run. She said she felt ragged and thought she was throwing it away. But she's obviously like, now she's fit. Yeah. Now she's healthy. Now she's got her head together. After all those years of like stuff happening, I just think now like...
Shoulders are in the sockets and she's a couple years older, maturity's kind of taken over and
screws in her head aren't rattling around anymore.
I think Rago is gonna she'll rise to the occasion.
Yeah,
that girl's she's pretty gnarly. She hangs it out, man. You watch her come down the course and you think you're watching like a Bruni or something, you know, or some ragged junior. He's like, whoa,
Robbie Bum.
Yeah. She's impressive, man. There's not too many girls that I can actually watch ride and we'll see. I think Rago, Val d'Isol kind of suits her style, you know?
Yeah.
Just hang off the back. Should be interesting for sure.
Running the black box fork and everything there. So I think that's the competition for women 1-2 this year. I think there's some others that'll assert themselves, but I think Rachel kind of served notice there that it could be a very long season. Even though it's not a long season, it could be a long season for these other women racing. So,
but how fortunate or how lucky is Rachel? You know, she gets to train with her brothers in a way. You know, it's like I think that's what's made her who she is.
Yeah.
She chases Dan and G Atherton around. I mean, come on, sink or swim.
Yeah. Either we'll see you at the bottom or we'll see you at the end of the day.
She wins or she busts a shoulder.
Dan,
you know?
Dan in particular has been the one to really push her on, like in younger life. Like I grew up kind of with them as well, and like Rachel, she was winning races but wasn't really into it. I can't remember. She must have been like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Dan was the one that was really pushing her. He saw that she had potential and he saw that he wanted the whole family to stay together and really pushed her. And so you're right,
even when I was there in 2010 and that and seeing him, you know, she rides with Dan a lot, you know, you know, and Dan's always the one, come on, let's go, you know. And it was cool to see, you know, being around that sort of family, you know. They're a good family and it's, you know, everything together, so it's good to see.
Yeah, they sometimes get some bad press.
Yeah.
It's just because they're so damn good and they're so damn focused.
Definitely.
They're so damn professional.
It's their livelihood, man.
Yeah.
But then you see them at their house, and you know, when they're all just a family and the dirt jumps and stuff like that, it's pretty cool to see.
Mm-hmm. Still down to earth at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
I think G's obviously one of the favorites, too, about the soul. Yeah. Can't argue against that. And
definitely.
He runs world champions, Stripe said.
Yeah.
Isn't he? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but are we going to see the Sam Hill again? Come up,
Sam Hill gonna make, is he gonna resurface and drift the crap out of that final corner?
Just
redemption,
himself.
Good to see.
I would love to just see him just one result and then just like drop the mic, boom, smoke bombs, walk off,
never will have a meltdown.
So I just think it's just a shame. Like I said, you'd rather see your heroes like burn, like you don't want to see them fade away.
And everybody loves a comeback story, right?
Yeah,
exactly. You know? He had a definite couple tough years with injuries and some personal stuff going on. So him and Gwynn, I mean, is the message boards going to light up next week? Because Gwynn serves notice and beats everybody by 10 seconds.
He's got a lot to prove, man.
It's, you know, I think if he has another bad weekend, there'll be reason to talk possibly, I think, in the big picture. I mean, right now it's just the internet being the internet, but... I think Gwynn, I don't see why he can't just get back on that horse and run down there.
He won last year by what, like 7 seconds or something?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but the GoPro footage of his helmet camera was never released for a reason, so maybe he's got some sneaky lines inside there we don't know about.
Inside. Yeah. We got him and then of course Stevie Smith. I mean it's
gonna be great.
It's hard to pick a 1-2-3. It's
impossible.
Yeah, it's not what we're doing. I mean, my top three in no order is definitely Smith, Hill, Gwynn.
Do you know what? And we also, like, we haven't talked about Danny Hart as well.
Yeah,
Danny Hart, he qualified first at Vermilion.
Yeah.
He'd been putting a lot of work there, but he's had a long time off the bike as well. Mm-hmm. Like, Brosnan, he's had a long time off, and he's coming back hungry.
Yeah.
Like, so I expect that Val d'Isle, he's gonna put something down.
He can hang it out there too, you know.
Same with Brooke, he'll be strong there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
it's exciting. Thank God Downhill's back.
Yeah.
Right?
Downhill's the best.
It's been a long 8 months.
Downhill's the best. I love it, man.
And we're fortunate we're going straight into our second round, so Val d'Isle this weekend. Okay. And cannot wait. So, again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to us here this evening. Like I said, check us out on iTunes and keep up to date with everything on our Twitter account. That's off_track MTB. And we'll be coming at you guys next week. We'll be announcing our guests later on. So thanks for listening. Curtis, Daniel, thanks for joining us in the studio.
No problem.
Thank you.
And Seb, thanks for being my co-host as always. Cheers. Joining us. I know you're a little jet lagged from your trip overseas there and everything. So, And Chainless Beeline Race tomorrow night. So.
Oh, can I just add, I've just seen a Facebook update from Len Horridge. The original hater.
Oh.
Ooh.
Apparently the course has been a bit shifted in Beeline tomorrow night, and it finishes in the village.
Ooh.
Which is going to really screw the Chainless results. Ooh. So I think it's a bad, bad choice by Bike Park. I think it's a bad choice. It should be Chainless versus all those pussies that won't take their chain off. And now we've added on the whole section of Heart of Darkness into the village. Those people with chains are going to get beat. I think it's those people that didn't want to get beat by fat man without chains.
It's kind of fat a few years ago, huh?
I don't think the top three tomorrow night are going to be fat, though. I have something to talk about next week.
I definitely agree. I think it should stick to the traditional or the older feline race. You know?
Yeah.
Finishing into the village, kind of takes some fun out of it. Really flat.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever, regardless, we'll end up at the GLC and having a good time.
High fives and gears.
Yeah.
This will start off Thursday morning.
Yeah. Thursday could be right off. Well, thanks for joining us again tonight, guys. And we will catch you guys next week. This is the Off Track MTB Show. Stop the spirits when they need you. This life is more than just a read-through.